Let's get down to business, taking a look at Wall Street. Dow Jones Industrial Average up 263 at 17,976. S&P 500 Index up 25 at 2,086. NASDAQ Composite up 56 at 4,947. Yield on the 10-year Treasury note up 1 basis point at 1.96%. Oil down 19 cents at $48.68 per barrel. Gold down $13.40 at $1,186 per ounce. Silver down 28 cents at $16.79. Commerce Department reports consumer spending rose just 0.1% in February. That follows a decline in January. The small increase in spending in February and the outright decline in January suggests the economy failed in early 2015 to match the pace of growth at the end of last year. Gross domestic product is forecast to expand 1.4% in the first quarter, down from 2.2% in the fourth quarter and 5% in the third quarter. Part of the problem might be the harsh winter weather for much of the country. If that is the case, we might expect a rebound in consumer spending in the spring. Or maybe the American consumer is just tired of spending and is actually starting to save. The saving rate jumped in February to 5.8%, the highest since December 2012, and it's up from 4.4% just 3 months earlier. The saving rate slumped to as low as 1.9% in the run-up to the recession, a sign too many Americans were spending beyond their means. Since then, consumers have been trying to clean up their finances. The National Association of Realtors said its pending home sales index rose 3.1% to 106.9 after a downward revision to January's numbers. Total existing home sales in 2015 forecast to be around 5.25 million. That's an increase of 6.4%, and the national median existing home price is expected to increase around 5.6%. The Commerce Department released the Personal Consumption Expenditures Price Index, or PCE Index, for February. It was up 0.3% for the past 12 months. The PCE is the Federal Reserve's preferred measure of inflation. The oil price crash, a strong dollar, and weak overseas economies have all kept inflation at bay. Some slack in the economy may also be keeping prices muted. But even after taking out food and energy, inflation came in at 1.4%, up very slightly from 1.3% in January. So inflation is still well short of the 2% target established by the Federal Reserve. And we know the Fed has lowered its target for the unemployment rate to around 5%. We also know that the targets are not firm. Full employment is that point where most people can find jobs and where the unemployment rate has dropped low enough where it just starts to spark inflation. Former Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke gave a speech and answered questions today at Johns Hopkins. Bernanke said he doesn't know where the so-called full employment level is now, saying the Fed is, in some sense, groping to determine it. One reason why it's difficult to determine full employment is because wages have been stuck in the mud. So even as people have found jobs, their wages haven't been enough to kickstart inflation. Many of the jobs lost during the downturn were good-paying jobs that were replaced in the recovery with lower-paying jobs or part-time work. So when it comes to pinpointing the full employment number, Bernanke says nobody really knows that number with any precision, adding, and the Fed will continue to grope to find out what the right number is. Now, in addition to a speech, today also marks the first day of Ben Bernanke's blog. His first post dealt with why the Fed has kept rates artificially low for a long time and hurt savers. Of course, the simple answer is that rising rates would slow the economy at a time when the economy was not yet recovered from a massive downturn. And in that regard, the economy determines rates more than the Fed. What Bernanke didn't really address is how lower rates pushed investors to chase yield, pushing them into the stock market, and what the effect of higher rates might be on the equity market, particularly if the Fed wants to raise rates. Still, what was also important about the Bernanke blog was why he chose this topic for his first blog post. It almost seems he's trying to get us ready for a Fed rate hike. Damn the torpedoes, higher rates ahead. But it doesn't look like the bond market is paying much attention. Rates remain low despite the Fed warnings that they want to hike rates at some point this year. It looks like the setup for a letdown. The big economic report this week is the jobs report, and it'll be unusual. U.S. exchanges will be closed on April 3rd in observance of Good Friday, the day when the government releases its official employment report for March. Good Friday is not a federal holiday. It's expected that the economy added about 255,000 net new jobs in March. The pace of first quarter profit warnings from S&P 500 companies is running slightly ahead of the same time a year ago and well ahead of the five-year average, ahead of the start of earnings reporting season, which unofficially kicks off when Alcoa reports results on April 8th. About 84% of the companies that have provided first quarter outlooks gave negative outlooks. That's above the 81% that warned for the first quarter of 2014 and higher than the five-year average of 68%. Many of the companies blame the negative effects of currency movements, lower commodity prices, or both, for the negative pre-announcements. Meanwhile, revenues of S&P 500 companies are expected to decline 2.8% in the first quarter from a year ago, which would mark the worst year-to-year drop since the third quarter of 2009. One sector is holding up well, healthcare, expected to see revenue growth of 9.1%. The energy sector, however, more than makes up for it. The average price of oil in the first quarter at $48.65 a barrel had been cut in half from a year ago when it was right at $98.56 per barrel. So revenues are expected to plunge 38%, and earnings for the energy sector are expected to drop 64%. But it's not just the energy sector. Expect declining earnings for utilities, materials, telecom services, consumer staples, and IT. Look for possible earnings growth in consumer discretionary, financials, and healthcare. Oil and gas companies are blaming the oil bust for the collapse of their revenues and earnings. The rest of the companies are blaming the strong dollar in near unison. But ironically, they're not pointing at the strong dollar and at oil as a force in lowering cost. Cost reductions are the result of superior management. Sales and earnings declines are the fault of the strong dollar. And, of course, there will be a spillover effect into the second quarter. In fact, revenues are expected to drop even more, down 3.1% compared to first quarter declines of 2.8%, and earnings, after the decline of 4.6% in the first quarter, are expected to fall 1.8% in the second quarter, down from an estimated growth of 4.2% and 5.3% respectively at the beginning of the year. Of course, part of this is an ongoing game of ratcheting down expectations, only to beat expectations when earnings are reported. But more and more, it looks like the economy might not be as strong as it is sometimes portrayed. Chinese stocks took off today after policymakers signaled the country had capacity to ease monetary policy and boost sluggish growth. Policymakers with the People's Bank of China said that China's policymakers had to be vigilant against the risk of disinflation and suggest that the nation had room to act. Greece's biggest creditor, Germany, said this morning that the Eurozone would give Athens no further financial aid until it has a more detailed list of reforms, and some are actually enacted into law. Greece submitted a list of reforms on Friday. Greek Prime Minister Alex Tsipras spoke to the Greek parliament today. He said that Greece's list of short-term measures to creditors included curbing fuel and tobacco smuggling, checks on bank transfers, and fighting sales tax fraud. He said it's time for the haves to start paying and for the looting of the middle class and salaried workers to stop. In the negotiations with creditors, he said, we are seeking an honorable compromise with our partners, but do not expect an unconditional surrender. A renewed Eurozone crisis poses the biggest risk to the global economy. That, according to a Fitch Ratings poll at its March sovereign credit briefing in Hong Kong and Singapore. The report showed that 41% of the respondents in Hong Kong and 45% in Singapore pointed to fresh Eurozone instability as the most likely thing to derail the global economic recovery, whether by design or due to the combination of Greece submitting a lot of not fully fleshed out reforms right before the Easter holiday. It looks like Greece stays in the sweatbox for at least the next 2 weeks. Monday is for mergers. Typically, the final details of a merger get worked out over a weekend, and the announcement comes on a Monday. We had a boatload of announcements this morning. United Health Group announced it plans to buy Catamaran Corp., the fourth largest pharmacy benefit manager, in a $12.8 billion deal. Teva Pharmaceutical Industries is acquiring Auspex Pharmaceuticals, deal valued at $3.2 billion. Horizon Pharma said it planned on purchasing the pharma company Hyperion Therapeutics for $955 million in cash and debt commitments. Switzerland's Dufry has agreed to buy airport tax and duty-free seller World Duty Free in a deal that values the latter at $3.9 billion, including debt. Dufry will pay about $1.5 billion for the Italian Benetton family's 50.1% in the airport retailer. The deal is the second high-profile foreign takeover of an Italian company in less than a week, after Kim China bought a majority stake in tire maker Pirelli last Sunday. And in Asia's biggest block deal this year, Chevron has sold its entire stake in Caltex Australia, the country's biggest refiner, $3.7 billion on that deal. We invite you to follow along at moneyradio.com, live streaming and archived audio, the daily blog, text and audio, at eatthebankers.com. That's eatthebankers.com. And you can subscribe for free to the iTunes podcast.